Dear listeners, welcome to our first captivating episode of our podcast series entitled Beyond Boundaries, Exploring Inequality and Freedom in the Global South. My name is Vanessa Badisch. I'm today's co-moderator. Together with my colleague Mamadou Diawara, I will guide you through this episode. First of all, I would like to introduce my dear co-moderator Mamadou. Hello Mamadou, how are you today?
I'm good. How about you?
I'm also very fine and I'm delighted to be with you. Thank you. And also, I want to give a warm welcome to our guest, Abdulrahman Sek. Welcome, dear Abdulrahman. How are you doing?
I'm very good. Thanks very much.
Delighted to hear that. Coordinated by the Marian Center of Advanced Studies in the Maghreb, MECAM, in Tunisia, and our Marian Center family, Callas in Mexico, ICAS MP in India, Mesila in Brazil, and Miasa in Ghana, we are on a mission to explore the intriguing intersection of inequality and freedom in the context of the Global South. Our objective? We are here to challenge the status quo as a part of the German Year of Science, Deutsches Wissenschaftsjahr 2024, focusing on freedom. By uncovering historical legacies and their effects on society, we are working together towards a fairer future in the Global South. Join us on this journey as we delve into the complexities of inequality and freedom, striving for a brighter and more equitable future together. In today's episode, we will be moving to Ghana and its capital, Accra, to the Marian Institute for Advanced Studies in Africa, MIASA. That is the occasion now for me to hand over to my colleague, MIASA Director Mamadou Diawara, who is Professor of Anthropology.
Thank you very much. I'm the Director of Germany of MIASA. Greeting from my side and from the side of my dear colleague, Professor Grace Diaba, sociolinguist and director of Ghana of MIASA. MIASA was founded in 2018 at the College of Humanities at the University of Ghana Legon campus. It's based on a collaboration between the University of Ghana and a consortium of German partners, let's say the University of Freiburg, the Goethe University of Frankfurt, the German Institute for Global and Area Studies, GIGA, and the German Historical Institute, Paris. Today's episode would be about knowledge production. We are privileged to have a distinguished guest with us, Dr. Abdulrahman Sek from Gaston Berger University in Senegal, a prominent scholar with a multidisciplinary background encompassing philosophy, anthropology, and modern and contemporary African history. Dr. Sek was a fellow at MIASA from September to December 2023. He has widely published on Islam, migration, and the question of the incomings in Africa, West Africa, Senegal. Alongside, Dr. Sek has been active in building concrete links through third places between academic spaces and community initiative for resilience. In 2020, during the first outbreak of COVID-19, he co-founded the Groupe d'Action et d'Études Critiques Afrique, a decolonial collective based in Saint-Louis du Senegal. Welcome, Dr. Sek, in our podcast. Before we dive into your research, could you briefly reflect on three fundamental aspects? To do this, could you complete these three sentences with very short answers? I'm researching.
I'm researching actually into something. I rise and take like a call. I try to head to than what we can usually have as fieldwork, data, object. So then this, for now, quite unclear reason, but nevertheless, very clear call, I would name it mammography.
Secondly, freedom. In my
scholarly explorations, freedoms means less, let's say, a quality matter on something or on someone. I will rather say that I have the feeling that freedom mostly means kind of path of actions. Path of actions, building capacities, you know. So then to navigate in the deep and risky infrastructures as well space structures that we trust our job, our duties is to try to prevent our present time.
Lastly, in the context of my work, inequality is
multi-complex based on the work of Giorgio Agamben, for example, working on Foucault's theories, because we have here kind of a mixture of traditional tools, ideas, and also modern tools, ideas to keep quiet a place, to domesticate a site in which we are. And yeah, I would say inequality is quite very much multiplex.
Thank you for setting the stage, Dr. Sek. Now, let's transition to the heart of today's discussion, your research. Would you mind sharing a detailed overview of your current research topic, especially focusing on how it relates to the thematic of the postcards episode? Please feel free to integrate relevant examples and highlight any recent developments that contribute to the discourse, please.
Very much. Let's start this by something we can quite clear feel like a trap or a catch. And that is that very complex situation in which we experience in the same times what we can express as an enthusiastic hopes and also kind of profound disappointments. So then it seems that when we look on African contemporary dynamics, we always have this kind of two trends coming together. So, and then we can say that it looks like what we can call more it change still that remains the same. So then this is kind of situation that is very complicated to read. And the question here is how we can try to make this more clear. So then this is the starting point of what I have called very earlier the mammography approaches. So this is a matter of trying to move out of the Eurocentric university gaze, but also the so-called burden of the nation states. So then the idea here we have is to try to nurture the need of delocate, delink, decenter this current institutions of African University to try to move to something different, in which all this contradiction, all these difficulties to read our current situation can be a little bit fixed. So what does a memographic approach to knowledge production in this situation can consist of? And what kind of knowledge are we talking about here? Both theoretically and practically, this is the matter of my work here. So also we can note that this memography I'm talking about presented itself to me in terms that in its manifest priorities, we not centered on the criteria as I also signaled earlier, that usually found the disciplines in the human and social sciences, an object or a goal and a method. At the same time, it was both all these things and none of them. So this is a very paradoxal situation. Memography engaged with the reading also issues in social science. And this is something very much important when we experience an oral societies. So by necessity, nevertheless, it borrows from every genre. It is less about data, of course, than the echo of the traces, as René Char will say. It holds to the untold, if I can quote here, Stefano Arne and Morton. That is also about the fold. Also a lot is here about Deleuze, Pastrana, etc. It's also about the sounds, it's about colors, it's about the rhythm, it's about emotions. It's about the time that passes, it's about the time we wait for, and the memory of life that lasts. It's also about the genius of paganism, because if you look about African society and how things are going, there's a lot of things that we miss to point out because we are too much disciplined by the cloisons and by the protocols of the classicism. I will describe this necessity to delocate and relocate African knowledge production system as kind of a typical method here. And also, rather than a post-disciplinary and theoretical, it's not only about post-disciplinary things, but a typical method maybe. For the memographies, if I may call it like this, it means then mostly paying attention to what people say insofar as it mediates the human, social, historical, cultural, economic, and political condition of our time. Something also very much important here to point out is that this try of memography is not a knowledge that has to be collected or captured through a situation of referential inquiries. It is instead an encountered inequality. This is something very much important. That's an author and intellectual like Mugiwa Chongo will express by this expression of real life. So, and it reminds me also a little on Pierre Bourdieu talking about public opinion does not exist. So memography is truly a move to get to get what is real in our life and to try to sit around this site and to hear, to be with compassion, to be concerned and to try to do things. That's why also when we talk about mammography, we try to work with some guides, like for example Walter Rodney, and I have here in mind his book Grounding with My Brothers in 1969. So then mammography is not a social sciences applied to a social body. It is a poetic, intellectual, political, and radical encountering that is experienced and made effective, above all, in the space of social connection and conversation. Not from a logic of investigation, again, but it truly deals with the centrality of experience and its signification by the subject, who is the site of it. Based on that, mammography can be something very much close to the big family of phenomenological approaches. But here I would say that it's something also different, because it's not mostly about cognitive concerns. It's something different. So then we that's why also, even though we can see some resemblance, it there are two things I think different. So because mammography is not reducible of descriptions of the experiences of consciousness, conditions, and cognitive processes of knowledge. If that is a way that possibly we can circumscribe it, mammography then would be less of a cognitive debate again, and more of an ecology of knowledge. And here we work alongside, Bonaventura da Souza Santos, and also a way to be in kind of relationships between communities and bodies of knowledge here. So then, understanding the experience of my contemporary is only part of the aim of the mammographic approaches. So, but also this way is how to cut also disbalance, inequalities, how to reframe that ideas of freedoms, and by asking the question of producing a knowledge from Africa, what does it mean? So then, in a global context, and I would say, okay, it must be somehow a matter of engineering by our hand knowledge that corresponds somehow to us. Of course, I'm very much aware on when we say we here, who is we, who are we? So this is a very political question, but it's just to go quickly. Then I said that if you relate all this to the current situations in Africa, particularly is a part of Africa where I come from, where a lot of things are now going on, so Francophone West Africa. We truly face to something like Didier Fassin or Richard Rechman has called the latency of trauma. And all these popular movements, very strong demands to new sovereignties, and the upheaval of the for the for renegotiating what we know about the past and what we need as new knowledge. It's a whole picture in which we truly need a different way to understand all this and to build a usefulness to build a useful understanding of what is going on right now in Africa. That's why also mammography is a way to escape, a way to deal with what Fred Morton, Sven Arne has called fugitivity, truly to move away again inequalities, to move away the lack of freedom, and to try to figure out how we can reinvent academia, how we can reinvent university through a new kind of relationship. Yeah, so that's what I wanted to say. Thanks.
Thank you very much indeed, Dr. Sek. Your presentation was truly insightful. I've prepared three focused questions to highlight different aspects of your presentation. I'll ask them all at once, and then I kindly request that you address each of these aspects in your answer. It's common to state that post-colonial African societies are crisscrossed with contradictory dynamics, as it is common to consider the development of these last 30 years of the continent as uneven. Is that not rather normal, or shall we believe in the social engineering of development agencies and banks which promised the best? In other words, how can we escape the syndrome of considering Africa as a continent in need of saving or a broken car to be fixed? The first point. Secondly, how can we make the African universities' current crisis the ground for epistemic breakthroughs, and how could these contribute to the effective transformation of the continent? So, which role could be assigned to our local languages to question our scholarly certitudes and for an epistemological renewal of the scholarship inherited from the Enlightenment? And lastly, how does mammography, a concept you crafted yourself, how does mammography challenge existing paradigms in the human and social sciences? And what implications does this post-disciplinary theoretical approach have for reimagining the role of academia in African societies? Can you provide examples of how mammography has been applied in practice to address specific challenges or issues within African universities, and what outcomes or insights have emerged from these applications?
Thanks very much. Let's start this by this injunction somehow. Go buy it in the international markets. Go buy it in the international markets was the advice African states got from the World Bank in the early 90s. If we remember well, in the early 90s, it was not only about what we call the fall of the Berlin Wall and the democratization of Africa. It was those concept was a very global concepts traveling here and there. But what was truly happened in West African societies at the turning point of history was that Moussa Traoré was fallen down. Senegal recorded a very important social crisis. Ivory Coast also started to experience a lot of problems. What's the common points of all of these? It was that something started to change within the African University, because World Bank and the International Monetary Fund were selling kind of reforms, and those reforms was not only to try to fix the problem of the university, but truly to make an agenda of where should we, our societies was supposed to go. And that's why and the what the point they were the point, the deep point of that advice actually was that, okay, you African societies, from your standing point, university is something quite expensive for you and you need to figure out something else. If you have some needs, it will cost for you less expensive to go to buy it in the international market rather than to try to build a university. So this is something that brings me to believe that we should especially not believe in the engineering of development agencies like the World Bank or the International Monetary Fund, because what they have planned for us is not something we want to be or somewhere we want to head to. Well, even less should we surrender to the Afro-pessimist discourses, because this is also a very important discourses which cannot see Africa as anything other than a subject of lament. That said, does being, I would say, valiant necessarily must mean having to hide from what we nevertheless know about our condition, because also our condition are very much critical somehow. And what do we do with the fact that in our population of approximately 840 million, a little over 30% are working poor, according to the figure from the Labor International Organization? We can just as easily talk about the 240 million of our compatriots who live in hunger, or the 2,500 lost or missing young people last year while trying to cross the Mediterranean, for example. Or finally, all these young people still who are still captured on the continent to be sold as slaves. So then this is a very critical and serious question. So then is why considering Africa as a car to be fixed? Yeah, I can truly hear this, but on the other hand also, we do have critical situation we must face with. So then Yes, we do have a problem, and a problem that is urgent to fix, because something is indeed wrong here. But are we just that? Are we just this problem? I just recall. I would say no, unfortunately. So, in the same vein, are we only the mark of the inequality and injustice of an unfriendly international system? I would say also no, without a doubt. Since we are also, and above all, everything that escaped the series of disastrous statistics on the continent, we are also the 99% who remains on. We have ceded the 1% that it seems Africa will wait, in the global production of knowledge. It's 99%. It's our languages, our creativity, our sense of survival, our joy of living and doing. To use Fanon word again. Talking about that Africa precede vivre et de faire. So, in this context, our university has become a place that very little embodies emancipation's ideals, ideals, what parents and students feel and suspect in her. Her virtue as a reaper of dreams and destinies. The category, recent and ongoing national history, has placed the university space in a position which is not only central, but imperial in the production and legitimation of knowledge. Even in its interests, in the indigenous knowledge or wisdom that it has transformed and frozen into heritage and archival issues. And all this question is very much important because what worth knowledge if we are going in so much troubles? So then, this is a very important point we need to keep on mind. So, but also to understand the dynamics, because right now, the crisis of this national history that embedded the history of the university of and also our modern way to produce knowledge. So this crisis of this national narrative, of course, undermines the distributions of roles, places, imaginations, and also epistemies. We are just witnessing almost everywhere in Africa legitimacy of the university. But also the crisis of the tribunician function of the intellectual, academic. The function is taken over by actors of a new genre. For example, even here in Ghana, I got the pleasure to discover last year Captain Smart. In Senegal, we do have Kucha and in Mali and in all these Western African countries, new kind of new popular intellectuals. So then, this development contributes to another feature, which is that on the which is that of the deepening of the collective denial of the usefulness and loyalty of the university, and this idea of disloyalty of the university is also very much important. due to its extroversion. So in the recent sovereignty crisis encountered by several West African countries, the university has very often found itself on the wrong side of history, under the pretext of sending the different political forces back to back, as its unions did not mobilize against the repression campaigns which accompanied the third term project in the sub-region, nor alongside the so-called Pan-Africa, the campaign. This development also contributes to another feature, which is that of the deepening of the collective denial of the usefulness and loyalty of the university. In the recent sovereignty crisis encountered by several West African countries, the university has very often found itself on the wrong side of history, under the pretext of sending the different political forces back to back. Its unions did not mobilize against the repressions campaigns which accompanied the third project in the sub-region, nor alongside the so-called Pan-African and sovereignty popular protest. The segments that moved inside the university were often viewed with great suspicion and disapproval. It's a true sign of the times, I think. The university is no longer the space in which critical and decolonial thought is forged, because things are happening. Something is shifting in the heart of the story that current Eurocentric African university can even see or can't cope with, because what is going on is a matter of challenging the meaning of that current university used to have. So then here truly we face with what Paul Ricoeur has called building a university, building a university, that fair university, you know, I can translate it this way. So this means that our university must free themselves and get away from the axis of desertions that are poorly understood and poorly accepted by the communities, our communities they are supposed to serve. In this context of crisis of confidence and orientations, it is important to identify the historical role of the European model of university in Africa to make it respond to our own realities in order to hope to revive the university sectors. That brings me to that question, all those questions on what should be that new university or those new academics and so. And here I will just say something about a question I read somewhere. It was Laura Ferre asking to Paul Jorion that question: how do you define yourself as an anthropologist? And what is here very much interesting in the answer that Jorion provided is that his answer truly has opened a lot of room to define himself as an anthropologist. So he was saying that, quotation, in my experience in Belgium and France, anthropology professors teach a bit of what they know and it's not very structured. So it can very well be a mosaic of different things. So there's an enormous amount of freedom when it comes to define oneself as an anthropologist. In the Anglo-Saxon world, which I came to know at Cambridge in particular, things are much more precise. things are very clear. There's an extremely well-defined discipline with its own history, epistemology, schools of thought, and so on. That's different being a British anthropologist is a very precise thing. Being a French or Belgian anthropologist is something more difficult to define. End of quotation. So I'm very much curious as to what Jorion might have had to say about the distinctive feature of German anthropology, and hence how one would then be a German anthropologist, or rather, how one would not be a Senegalese anthropologist. These questions lies at the heart of kind of malaise we should and must feel when we don't want questions this European model of university in Africa that I mentioned it earlier. And also, and of my clear but unformulated and unconceptualized refusal since my very start to doing anthropology in Senegal, refusal to perpetuate the ethnographic gesture on the world of my own people. So even if it were to be just another name for an approach that was already long established and confined to the same field of knowledge as anthropology, even so, it would still be salutary. So then, I remember doing my first so-called field work on my countries, feeling very much in some kind of discomfort because it was for me something quite strange to be here around and playing to be an anthropologist or something like that. And I understood that something here is wrong. Which kind of research are we supposed to do, and for what, for whom, etc., etc. So I came up slowly. With these notions of memography, it can be unsatisfactory, but it seems for me that it was something truly that I needed to experience, to try to, yeah. So because this way to change our move as researcher in our societies is also to build truly a relational space, because what provoke it, that discomfort I'm talking about here, was that was a lack of relational space. So it was like that I had to be neutral, or I couldn't be neutral. So then research for me must reinvent university in the way that we are not neutral, because we are engaged into this history. So then doing research is also building a relational space, which for my part broke down the disciplinary dichotomy, subject-object, in my case, to understand contemporary Senegal, for example. The word memography itself, as I suggested earlier, has appeared late in my work during some seminars, conference, research proposal here and there, to name the specific experience of the researcher and activist that I work to be in the field of the ongoing history of Africa and the world, but also in the field of international political economy that holds the production of knowledge on Africa or in connection with Africa. Yeah.
Thank you very much indeed.
Thanks a lot. It was a very interesting insight already, what we got from you. As we near the conclusion of today's episode, Abdulrahman, could you please condense your ideas into a brief takeaway message for our audience?
Yeah, thank you very much, Vanessa. I will recall that defeated France in the midst of reconstructions and anxiety increased its spending on research by 75% between 1958 and 1960, to say that it's really an urgent time to raise the question of who does the university work for? Who does African university work for? To do what? To fix what? What should the coming then African university be called, if not a project of liberation from its dependence on the extroverted states and its models? That's something we need to fix, and I think this is a very important message I want to share here. The university we must build must bring about political and mental change. Political and mental change is very much important here. So all we are saying here is less just to criticize university, but mostly to insist to the fact that we have to take university very much seriously. But taking the university seriously in a historical context so marked by various and varied ruptures, disruptions, means to leave its mimetic and instrumental measure and to return it to the need of meaning and the aspiration of society, of societies, current societies, very much agitating and very much shocked by the double questions of memory and future, anxious to inhabit the world and life differently. Yeah, that's what I want to share.